Thank you very much. And thanks to all our contributors, and once again to all of you for a very, very challenging afternoon, I think. Also, I would dare to say, quite a hopeful one. Hopeful in the sense that there's plenty of convergence, hopeful in the sense that the recommendations emerging are robust and specific. In my very brief, I promise, concluding remarks, I'll just flag up a small handful of practical questions and then conclude with what I think are the big picture questions emerging from our discussion. Among the practical questions, I think, is, for example, that of the cycle of funding, the timescale on which we work. It's almost an obsession of mine in any development, any empowerment piece of work or agenda, whether here in the UK or more widely, that we are constantly caught between funding regimes that are unrealistically tight and short-term, and the needs of actual communities and actual persons, which do not simply slot into the expectations of funders. There's no quick or simple answer to that, but we have got, I think, to keep pressing on that, because there are many flatly unrealistic ways of approaching funding. We've heard about some of them. So that's a practical issue which emerges. There's a very interesting cluster of questions about age. We heard about the point at which we start education. We also heard some suggestions or hints about the other end, so to speak. How late can you get people into the system, into the process? Because when you have children whose education has been seriously disrupted, what do you do at the next stage on to restore what's missing? And I think flexibility at both ends of the process we're talking about has to be one of the things which emerges as a major priority in conflict situations, especially where you can take it for granted there will be interruption. What are you going to do about that? How are you going best to respond to that? And then there's the fascinating set of issues around, as I said earlier, delivery and the development of technology and appropriate technology for delivery. We heard about the significance of mobile phone technology in that connection. And that's something which, again, I would like to hear a lot more discussion of. I gather there is quite a bit of work going on in this area as to what kinds of very simple and accessible technologies are being developed and are capable of being developed to deliver more widely. And I think there's a broader question then which relates a little bit to the very first question about the political agenda, a question about employment, a question about what use people are encouraged and enabled to make of the education that they're given, whether they're in an environment where there's an adequate variety of paths of employment, or whether it's a culture dominated by certain options. I'll come back to that in a moment. So those are some of the simply practical questions that seem to me to be coming up repeatedly in different ways in what we've been looking at. But I think I'd want to put all of those within the very broad issue of three kinds of culture change, or three contexts for culture change to emerge here. The first builds immediately on what I've just been saying about employment, and that's the culture of a conflict-ridden situation itself. A culture in which it will seem easy or obvious to make your living one way or another through conflict rather than in resistance to conflict. That is, to exploit conflict for your own ends. Is that an assumption that's being made? Because that is a cultural background factor which can be absolutely toxic, and we've heard firsthand just how toxic that can be. I was very moved and very struck by what was said about the way in which teachers and students alike can be, if you like, siphoned off into simply keeping a conflictual, unjust, and in the end of the day, unsustainable pattern of social behavior going generally. So there's the culture of the whole situation, and that involves things that have to do with family stability, with governance, with the robustness and density, if you like, of local community life, all sorts of things like that. Second culture change, or cultural factor anyway, is the culture of the educational institution itself. And I was very glad that we were able to speak honestly about the fact that you can't guarantee that the educational institution is intrinsically a safe space. There's a need for protocols of behavior, yes. There's also, behind that, the need for the formation of teachers. Not just training, but formation. Formation in a certain kind of attitude to their work, to their charges, to their social environment. And that surely is one of the areas where faith-based communities and organizations have an absolutely vital role. Setting and monitoring those standards. And the third culture shift is in the culture of donor communities. And that has perhaps been, from the very first words spoken this afternoon, a golden thread running through the whole thing. And that is locating education at the very heart of a humanitarian agenda. That's to speak in very broad, very general terms. But what that means specifically, surely, is constantly keeping on the table the challenges to donor agencies to think about their cycles of funding, and also to think about where they invest. I absolutely agree, it's not for anyone to say, well, sorry, it's a bit too complicated to give you an education. I think what we might do, as it were, turning that around, is to say, well then, let's come up with some ideas that don't simply involve putting up vulnerable or temporary structures and see what would work, even in a very unsafe situation. What sort of technologies would you want to put money into developing that would circumvent some of the difficulties of the fact that buildings get burned down or abandoned? And to pursue that kind of creativity with donor agencies, I think is, again, something which those of us here this afternoon would have some expertise and some good grounds for following through. Because whatever else you might want to say about religious faith, it is a culture-shaping matter. As I think Lynn was grunting, even from the margins or beyond, it's a culture-shaping factor. We'd better know what the culture-shaping effects are of the way we talk religiously. Because if we get that right, if we get it creative, if we get it positive, then we can shape these three cultures, I believe, in ways that will take us forward in the long term. Now, we are in this for the long haul, and while it's eminently worth pressing forward towards 2015 and the MDG delivery dates with as much optimism as we can muster, we need to be very sharply aware of the fact that 2015 is not the point at which we can, even if all the MDGs were achieved by then, not a point where we can sit back and say, well, we've done that. And we had an interesting meeting not so very long ago, as Rachel will recall, here in this building, which was basically on what happens after the MDG dates. What's the next phase? What's the next round? And I think, once again, that's something which we, all of us, need to keep working at. We have seen impressive, in some ways dramatic, progress in getting children into school, and we've been reminded of two of the elements that forbid any complacency. And that is the flatlining of this process in conflict-afflicted situations, and the quality of and the long-term effectiveness of what's delivered when you've got children into school. So, again, back, I think, to some cultural questions that take us to a level deeper than just ticking boxes or being satisfied about statistics. And My sense of the discussion this afternoon has been that we've had an entirely right and proper interweaving of some very, very practical questions, some very pragmatic issues about where the priorities are, and a bit of a sense of urgency about shifting these cultures in different ways. And I hope we don't lose that sense of urgency. Gordon Brown began for us, I think, with just that sense of urgency. I hope we caught that and will keep it fresh in our minds and our hearts. So once again, thank you very much indeed. I hope that networks and contacts built this afternoon will flourish, that we'll continue in this conversation, and above all, that our continuing in this conversation will help to do something for those who most need the hope, the positivity, the creativity, the sense of agency that education alone can give. Thank you.